This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The novelist Janice Y.K. Lee grew up in Hong Kong, and she's made that world her subject. It's all about the complicated relationships of wealth and power among Chinese, Americans, British, and immigrants from all over Asia. Lee is the author of The Piano Teacher, a romance set around World War II, and recently, The Expatriates, which takes place right about now.
The new expatriates arrive practically on the hour, every day of the week. They get off Cathay Pacific flights from New York, BA from London, Garuda from Jakarta, ANA from Tokyo, carrying briefcases, carrying Louis Vuitton handbags, carrying babies and bottles, carrying exhaustion and excitement and frustration. They've mostly been cramped in coach. A precious few have drunk champagne in first. Others have watched two movies in business class eating a ham and brie sandwich. They are thrilled. They are homesick. They are scared. They are relieved to have arrived in Hong Kong. Their new home for 6 months, a year, a three-year contract max, forever. Who knows? They're fresh-faced. They're mid-career, hoping for that crucial boost up the ladder. They're here for their last job, the final rung before they're put out to pasture.
That's from The Expatriates, the new novel by Janice Y.K. Lee. She recently sat down with The New Yorker staff writer, Jiayang Fan.
In one book review that I read of The Expatriates, you were called a modern Henry James, but funnier, which is not bad accolade
and
for...
And female. Don't forget female.
And female for an author. And certainly part of my pleasure of reading your books was your granular observation of class distinctions and also of, you know, cultural tribalism in Hong Kong. What is it about the city that, you know, drew you to writing about it?
You know, I was born and raised in Hong Kong. I'm Korean. My parents had moved to Hong Kong a year before I was born. So I always felt like a local, but I would think a lot of local Chinese would not say I'm a local. And
right.
That was often the first thing they would identify about me, that I wasn't Chinese. I was this Korean kid in the American school in Hong Kong, which is a British colony in China. That's a lot to sort of digest. I've never felt fully part of any group, which I think is really helpful for a writer. It
mm-hmm.
helps you have some distance and
mm-hmm.
become more of an observer. So, you know, first I started writing my first novel, The Piano Teacher, about a situation that I had encountered as a child myself. I had piano lessons from this English piano teacher. That sort of situation interested me, that a English woman would be teaching an Asian child in an Asian city that used to be a colonial city. And, you know, I never would have told you that I would have written a historical novel set in Hong Kong as my first novel. You know, for all of my 20s, I'd been writing about 20-somethings in New York or Korean Americans or, you know, things that were sort of more immediate to me. But I found that the distance was helpful. I liked writing about something that was so different. It's basically a colonial novel set in World War II, which is about as far from my experiences as you can get.
I wondered, you know, after attending college in the U.S. and living in New York for a while, as I know you did, and then returning to Hong Kong with your husband in 2005, I think it was, what was that experience like?
When I moved back to Hong Kong, it was, you know, as an adult, and I seemed like an American, but at
right.
the same time, I wasn't an American expat. I was coming back home. My parents still live there. So I knew exactly what I was getting into, because it wasn't my world when I lived in Hong Kong, but it was a world of all my friends and my friends' parents, because they were the American expats. And I knew that by going there, you know, from America with my American husband and my pretty, you know, my kids were young at the time. I knew where we were going to live. I knew where we were going to send our kids to school. It was all sort of, I knew, and I felt ambivalent about it. But off we went, because jobs are important. And I knew that, you know, I was going to have these very different lives where I had this local life and then I had this expat life. But that's okay because I, you know, I've lived my whole life with a lot of duality and plurality, I guess.
You know, I was born in China and I grew up there until the age of 8. And for me, Hong Kong was a mythical place. I was born in the mid 80s. And Hong Kong music, Hong Kong fashion, even the skyline of the city was iconic. And I think I would have given anything to trade places with you.
I think Hong Kong always had that very glamorous image, you know, way back when from movies and books about it. And I was certainly aware that we had a lot of privileges compared to even when we went back to Korea in the 70s and 80s, that we had a lot more. And we couldn't even think about China because it was so closed off at that time. So I can imagine from sort of like looking from the mainland to Hong Kong, how those freedoms and that wealth must have seemed like Valhalla. But I was a kid, and so you're like, this is where I live. And it didn't seem glamorous. A lot of times people think of the skyline of Hong Kong, but you can have a very idyllic childhood there, and it's very quiet. For a time, we lived above sort of a beach that was backed by a farm. So I would just go downstairs in my apartment building and we'd go through the farm and go to the beach.
Oh, so, that sounds amazing.
it was so safe. And so these were the things I thought about Hong Kong and I didn't think about the glamour, you know, but there were those things that made me realize we're living in a world city.
Now, as a Korean who was being educated in English in Hong Kong, did that mean that you were speaking three languages at the same time as a child?
I'm comfortable in English and Korean and French and speaking, but actually it's funny, my Mandarin and Cantonese are not so good.
You know, I think that's part of having a language that you are schooled in. And for me too, that has come to be English. But for me, I think what struck me about being in Hong Kong as a 17-year-old visiting my best friend on a break from boarding school was, as an American who grew up in mainland China, I only knew how to speak Mandarin and English. And there was this very weird moment in which if I spoke, this was in 99, so, you know, some years back, but if I spoke Mandarin Chinese, I was looked down upon. And if I spoke English, I was considered snobbish or uppity. And I felt very much judged no matter what I spoke. And
right.
I wonder if since the departure of the British and the arrival en masse of mainlanders, if local Hong Kong citizens see themselves, you know, differently, if there's any change in their sense of identity.
Right. There's a passage in the book about how local Hong Kong Chinese are like the landed gentry, and they're beset by the mainlanders who, like, come in droves with their money and their loud voices and their, you know, sometimes terrible travel habits. So I think there's so much tension. And I think that local Chinese both need and hate to need the mainland Chinese. I mean, they complain so much about how they come and they buy up things like baby formula and Ferrero Rocher, that chocolate that's somehow become like the gift of choice in China.
I love that.
I know. So like baby formula and Ferrero Rocher are like these smuggled goods because you can only take out like 2 containers of baby formula per person. And they come in because of the sheer number of people, like sometimes it became difficult for locals to get baby formula for their own babies, which is obviously, you know, a very fraught situation. But, you know, they complain so much and then there was a period, I think, where tourism has dropped, and now Hong Kong is hurting. Like, they need the mainland Chinese tourists, but they love to complain about them and, like, put videos on the internet about how badly behaved they are. But it's all, you know, integral to the economy. It's very tricky.
In a book, I was really struck by how much hired help figured into the lives of these very capable, independent women. And I wondered, as you write, hired help is much more expensive here in the States and not as common. Does the prevalence of maids and servants in Hong Kong shape its social reality in some way? Do you think it—
Absolutely. I mean, we have to remember, though, that the idea of domestic help in Hong Kong did not come about for the comfort of American expats, which is what is written about in my book. It's a very small segment of the population. It's a program that the Hong Kong government entered into with the governments of other countries to bring affordable help so that Hong Kong's local population could have two working parents in order to afford the very expensive, you know, lifestyle. Like, real estate in Hong Kong is about as expensive as you can get. But for people coming from a different country, a different economy, where the rate exchange, for, I guess, lack of a better word, is more favorable, it's very, very inexpensive. And when I went to Hong Kong from the U.S., I had a baby and I had a two-year-old. And so for me, it was a wonderful change because it gave me more time. Like, I had felt all this guilt about not doing every single thing for my child, and I had no time to work. And when I got to Hong Kong, I was able to work because I wasn't expected to be with my child every minute of the day.
I can imagine, especially for a writer or anyone in the creative field, it's a lot more liberating.
Yeah.
And, you know, that gets us to the three main characters in Expatriates, all of whom I found very compelling. They're all women. They're very intelligent and well-educated. But in this new environment, they're made to somehow feel superfluous for different reasons. Can you talk a little bit about the sexism, you know, if that's the right word, that you observed in Asia versus what it's like in the West? Is it a difference in quality or, you know, degree?
Well, it's hard for me to talk about Asia as a whole because the world I depict in The Expatriates is so Western. I mean, I would say 95% of the people in the book are American, and not even just expats, they're American. So I feel like the sexism or any sort of gender perspective that you see in that section would be the same in the U.S. just because of the same people. They just happen to be in another city. And it's underlined by the fact that these women are there and they don't work. And they're there because of their husband's job, so that then makes them feel more superfluous than if they were at home and working. So I don't, you know, I don't like to think of it as sort of a gender perspective in Asia because it's not. It's like a gender perspective in an American expat bubble in Asia.
Right. Though in the book, I thought there was a very vivid passage about, I believe, a character recalling, you know, how many spouses had been left by their husbands and how traumatic that is for
right.
the woman. And I would think that, especially if you are a trailing spouse and you come to a foreign country for the sake of your husband, and if he leaves you, then there's this real emptiness because professionally you have nothing. And after your family breaks apart, that really leaves you in a vacuum.
And that's problematic geographically as well, because a lot of the times they can't leave because, they, you know, there are legal ramifications to having children with someone and, you know, how far away you can take them. So I think it was evident that that happened a lot. And, I don't know that it happened more than it does in the U.S., but because the community was so small, it just – we heard about it more.
Were there any husbands that came to Hong Kong with – was there ever a trailing husband that came with their
yes,
wife?
Of course. But, you know, the mommies didn't want to hang out with him that much.
Janice Y.K. Lee, author of The Piano Teacher and The Expatriates, talking with The New Yorker's Jiayoung Fan.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.